Blog Talk Radio.
You find out life's this game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Hell yeah.
They're in every break of the game. Every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch.
Good evening, all. Good Tuesday evening to you all. Coming to you here from the Frat House. Frat House Mike bringing you another Red Zone Blitz program here on Tuesday, October 28th. We just finished up Week 8 of the NFL football season, and we're going to be taking a look at quite a few of the things that took place over the past, well, I guess since last Thursday, and how those things may have affected or shook things up. But I'll tell you, I got a question. I'm going to throw it out there. I always like to start the show off with a question for the audience. I'm going to throw one out there right for you guys that are listening. As you look around this league, isn't it evident? I mean, let's get it straight. The AFC is superior to the NFC. Just an observation. 347-826-9964. Yeah, we're going to kick it off right early and get things going. 347-826-9964. That's how you get in with us. And let me get your thoughts on that one. Hey, I don't know. It's just an observation on my part. If you look around, take a look at the two conferences, take a look at all the divisions, AFC is a superior conference to the NFC and everything we've got going on over there. Joining me as always, I've got Brandon with me. Brandon, how are we doing tonight?
Good. Ready to talk some football.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it because I don't know at any given moment my voice could give out. You know, it's just one of those kinds of things. Hopefully this will be the last Indian summer day and maybe it'll really start getting, I'm hoping kind of maybe the cold weather might actually help. I'm not sure, but I don't know if it's the allergies or what, but my voice could give out at any given moment. So I'm glad to hear that you're ready to go. And, you know, we were mentioning last evening, if anybody didn't really notice, because it kind of did get by everybody a little bit quietly, 4 o'clock this afternoon was the trade deadline. And, you know, I was joking with you last night, Brandon. I said, oh, well, we might have a few things to talk about. From everything I can gather, with the exception of maybe Tampa Bay fire-selling their defensive, some of their defensive core, I don't think there was any movement at all in the NFL today, was there?
No, not really. As a matter of fact, I think the two guys you're mentioning from Atlanta were both more or less backups for them. You know, they're place fillers for the Patriots. New England Patriots acquired a linebacker that we've chronicled here their injuries with Gerard Mayo. He'll probably help a little bit with that. The other player, Mark Barron to the Rams,
right,
he was a safety, and I believe he might have been, you know, like the nickel package guy or something, but he wasn't like a starter. So, you know, I think the Buccaneers realize where they are, and they didn't get much for either player, really. I mean,
no, they didn't.
Mark Barron was like the 7th pick in the draft when they acquired him in 2012, and they got a 4 and a 6 for him, which is really not a lot 2 years later. The Patriots gave up like next to nothing for the guy they get the linebacker.
Yeah, I think
they
guys
got.
Gave up a fifth, I think.
I don't even think it was that high. I think it's a conditional pick. Depending on where he goes, it could be, you know, Actually, I think what they did is they did a swap. I think they did give a fifth, but they also got a sixth back along with the player Castellas. Gotcha. I don't even know how to say his name.
Yeah,
Jonathan.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Castellas or whatever.
Yeah, I don't have it. Oh, hold on. No, the only one I have up is the Mark Barron one. There are some outlets right now though that are praising the Mark Barron one, and I got to be honest. I mean, you know, looking at my Eagles team, I'm thinking to myself, well, you know what? For as cheaply as that was going, you know, the Eagles could have been in the mix for that one. I mean, what the heck?
But, no, I'm not really. I don't really understand the rationale of the Rams really giving away draft picks. They're only 2-5 right now. They're really not in it. I'm surprised they gave away a 4 and a 6 for a guy, you know, that's really not going to help them this year. You know, they're kind of in a, well, I guess they've been in constant state of rebuild mode, but their quarterback keeps getting hurt every year, so it's really tough to nail down anything.
And where they need their help is they need their help on the offensive side of the ball. Their defensive side of the ball is really not all that bad.
No, not really. So I don't really understand it from that point of view. I totally understand the Patriots move because, you know, they've had injuries. They're trying to help fill the hole. You know, you're never going to replace Jerod Mayo. You know, they've already acquired two different linebackers now. You know, hopefully one of, you know, the combination of both of them should help. But, you know, we'll have to see moving forward how it pans out.
Yep. Well, okay.
But it was pretty much an uneventful trade deadline. Yeah,
yeah, I was going to say.
We covered the biggest deal with the Sidney Rice one a week and a half ago or whenever that went down.
In 3 minutes there, folks, we've just brought you up to date on everything that happened on today's exciting trade deadline in the NFL.
there generally isn't any big play, you know, big trades. Most of the bigger trades happen in the offseason or during the draft. You don't usually see them in season, as the Sidney Rice deal was actually a bit of a shock when it occurred. You know, because it was a bigger name with a bigger contract that usually most teams can't absorb that money. And, you know, as we covered on our Frat House Sports Show on Thursday, you know, money was a part of that deal. But, you know.
You mean Percy Harvin.
The Percy Harvin deal, yeah. I mean, the Jets needed to acquire some salary, and the Seahawks wanted to get rid of it. So it kind of worked out well for both of them. But, so uneventful trade deadline. It's not like baseball, that's for sure, or even hockey. Where you see some trade deadline deals, but that's just the nature of the NFL, I think.
But we did have some action, obviously, this past weekend. And we had some action that actually started much earlier than normal on Sunday, as we went out to the London game between the Detroit Lions and the Atlanta Falcons. Now, interestingly, unlike the last time, when that game was brought to us at our normal 1 p.m. Eastern time, for us here. In fact, what they did was they brought that one to us much earlier in the morning as they played that game at 1 o'clock or 1:30 in the afternoon or 2:30 in the afternoon, I believe. England time, British Standard Time, they played that at 2:30 in the afternoon, which meant that for us to get it here in the East, we were kicking off football at 9:30 in the morning. If you were in the West, you're kicking football off at 6:30 in the morning. So, I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't mind it too much. NFL has indicated, we might mess around with that again. We might try that again. Of course, we are already starting to hear that we have one more game that's going to be in England, and that'll be on November 9th, and that's going to be the Cowboys and the Jaguars. That one will come to us at our 1 o'clock, at what we know here in the East is a normal 1 o'clock time. But already for next year, they're already talking 5 games at Wembley, Brandon. So I guess they're looking at, I guess there'll be a little bit more of this early morning stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I mean,
I know.
I don't know that there's going to be 5 teams willing to give up a home game to play over there. I mean, that's the biggest part of this problem. Well, I don't know if it's a problem, but, you know, the NFL is actually blackmailing teams if they want a Super Bowl bid. They got to include in the deal of the, you know, Super Bowl that they give up a home game that year to play in London. And, of course, our friend Jerry Jones down in Dallas is already putting together a proposal to skirt that rule and try to get another Super Bowl without giving up a home game. He already knows it's going to be a, quote, uphill battle. But, yeah, I don't know that you're going to get five willing teams anyway. I mean, look at, you know, we've already heard, you know, repeatedly about Jacksonville and how Jacksonville, you know, may end up being the team that moves there if they ever do have a permanently based team there. But even if he's willing to give up, say, two home games, you still got to come up with five other home games or three other teams willing to give up home team gate. You know, I mean, they get some of the piece from Wembley Stadium, but they don't get all the peripherals they get when they play at their home stadium. They don't get the piece of the parking and the concessions and all the other stuff. So the teams are not, plus they got to do the travel and, you know, not all the teams are real keen on that. So,
well, I wouldn't imagine. I know as a player, I wouldn't be, that's for darn sure.
One thing that I'm looking now that I'm seeing here, the ratings for that game actually were not bad. At least it's comparable to a number that Fox is getting for the World Series. Got a 6.6 rating with a 17 share, which is about what Fox draws for a World Series game. Now, I don't know how that would compare to like a prime time NFL game here. I would imagine that's less than half, but for a game that's not, you know, a marquee matchup by any stretch of the imagination, and, you know, two teams playing over, you know, in London, that's probably not bad, and it's probably not going to dissuade the NFL from doing it again.
And I would suspect those numbers had to be coming from the East Coast and from the Central Time Zone. I cannot imagine people out in, California, Washington, getting up to watch a game at 6:30 in the morning.
Well, luckily the NFL.
I mean, I would, but then
I don't know.
I
don't know if the NFL really thought this far into it. But the two teams playing were the Atlanta Falcons in the East Coast and Detroit, who I believe is in the Central Time Zone. So, really, neither one of those fan bases would have had to get up all that extremely early to watch the game.
No.
So, you know, it wouldn't be like, you know, a 49ers fan having to get up at 6:30 a.m. to watch a football game.
Well,
so,
you know, interestingly enough, I thought of that the other day as I'm looking at this. Wow, this 9:30 start time, and boy, the folks out in the West, you know, that's going to be 6:30. And I'm thinking to myself, can you imagine if that were the San Diego Chargers?
Yeah.
How that Chargers fan base would probably be, I would imagine, would be a bit perturbed.
Well, I wonder if that went a little bit of thinking into which game they tried this out on.
Exactly.
You know, they may have, NFL probably actually thought about it, believe it or not.
I'm sure they did.
Yeah, so I think we may see more of it. I don't know that, you know, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, I think we all have our opinions on the quote-unquote, you know, London experiment, which looks to be more than an experiment. But, you know, we'll have to see how it goes, I guess, moving forward.
No, and we here at Pratt House Sports we're on record. I think almost every one of us is not terribly thrilled with the concept. We really don't want to share our sport. My attitude is, hey, you already have your football. Keep your football. Leave us alone. 347-826-9964. How do you feel about games being played over in England, London, England? Huh? How do you? I don't. Maybe there's people that really dig the idea. Hey, give us a holler. But looking at that game, and we'll do it real quick, because really, when you and I kind of here's how I phrased it for our purposes for the outline here. We were putting the show together for tonight. The folks in London, England, well, they got a double bang for their buck because, in my opinion, they got two games in one with this Detroit and Atlanta game. First half was all Atlanta. At halftime, it was 21-0 Atlanta. And from that point forward, Atlanta never scored another point. And go over to the second half. It was all Detroit. Detroit then scored 22 points in the second half and won the game 22-21. The folks in London got themselves a double. They got a double bag here because they got two games in one.
Yeah. And it was a last minute field goal too.
It was.
Prater kicked it as time ran out apparently. So yeah, I guess it was, they got a good finish, an exciting finish. You know, I don't know how invested they are as a fan base in, you know, Detroit or Atlanta, but, you know, they probably got an entertaining game, I guess, let's just say. I mean, if it counted as all a whole, but It wasn't a back-and-forth affair, that's for sure. As you pointed out, it was all Atlanta the first half and all Detroit the second. So, you know, at least they got the excitement.
The folks in Atlanta, I would think, at this point right now, are just beside themselves as their team now has dropped to 2-6.
Yeah.
I know that I have read there are a lot of fans out there that are not very happy with Matt Ryan, and yet when you look at this game, you cannot really put the blame of any of this at the feet of Matt Ryan. He was 20 of 27, 228 yards, two touchdowns. Yes, he did have an interception, but his overall QB rating of 108.3 was a good 30 points better than his opponent on the other side, Matt Stafford. So, really, when you compare the two quarterbacks, Matt Ryan had the better performance.
Yeah, well, I don't think Matt Ryan's the problem here. I think the problem is coaching and preparation. And, you know, unfortunately, I think that coach down there, Mike Smith, is, you know, on borrowed time. Everything you read, Arthur Blank's not happy. I think the coaching staff's gone. I think you may even see a total house cleaning, and GM, you know, and personnel department might go as well. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But we're definitely, you know, coach is done. There's no doubt. It's not going to happen probably before the end of the year. But, you know, he's on, you know, he can see the writing on the wall.
Do you have any clue what in the world happened here? Because, I mean, Mike Smith, not that long ago, a couple of seasons ago, was being hailed as one of the better coaches in the league. He was taking this team to the playoffs. I mean, he looked like he had everything going and going quite well.
Can I tell you, I don't know personally, but it seemed like he got a little arrogant. His demeanor after the early success and, you know, the way the team performed, you know, year after year, Mike Smith almost looked a bit arrogant on the sidelines. You know, not that, you know, that's not, you know, important. I mean, every successful head coach, you know, portrays that and is that. I mean, look at Parcells, Belichick, you know, you can go through the list, you know. But he just, I don't know. I have a feeling the players are probably tuning him out. And I think that's part of the problem. I think, you know, they've had a couple years in a row now of disappointments. I don't think, you know, I just don't think it's going to work for him there anymore. I think his time is coming gone, and he's just going to have to go be a coordinator somewhere, and maybe he'll get another shot and learn from it. A lot of these guys, you know, we've seen numerous examples, you know, of guys in the NFL who are way more successful their second time around. I mean, just last year, Super Bowl winner Pete Carroll, you know, I believe this is even his third round.
This is third, correct. Yep.
And he's, you know, he finally got it. You know, I mean, his second round was with the Patriots, taking Bill Parcells' team down, you know, right after a Super Bowl, and every year kept getting worse till he got fired. So, you know, he clearly learned from his first two attempts in the NFL, and he's clearly in control in Seattle. And even though that team's not having the greatest year, you know, they're still competitive. They're in it. They're going to, you know, I don't think we've heard the last of the Seahawks yet. Let's put it that way.
Yep. All right. Another game I want to go over, and we don't have to spend a heck of a lot of time on it. I the only reason I haven't put it on the list is because, well, interestingly enough, it was actually an upset, and that was the Minnesota Vikings beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 19-13. Vikings extended their record to 3-5, and the Buccaneers dropped back to 1-6. And you might sit there and go, well, wait a minute, you're kidding me. Tampa Bay was a favorite? No, they were. They were a home point favorite against this, I guess, kind of young and rebuilding Minnesota team who was Teddy Bridgewater back there, what, for his maybe third full game, Brandon? And you got the likes of McKinnon running back, actually starting to come on and really looking like the real deal. Bridgewater, 24 of 42, 241 yards, one touchdown. Nicely enough, this kid's not throwing interceptions. That's a good thing. I mean, his completion percentage isn't quite what you would – I mean, look, he's a rookie, Bridgewater. So, you know, you give him a little bit of some slack there. Completion percentage not quite there yet. I think the good sign, the hopeful sign, is we're not seeing the interceptions from him. He ended up with an 81.5 QB rating. Asiata has, for all intent and purpose now, been put on the shelf. That's what it's appearing at this point.
Yep. Yeah. McKinnon looks to be the guy. They're grooming him to be, you know, the heir apparent, because clearly we've already discussed Adrian Peterson that, you know, more than likely with his cap number, he's going to be playing somewhere else, possibly in Texas. But, you know, as they say, you know, they're grooming the replacement, and he's doing a great job. Clearly the Vikings have a good offensive line coach, and they know how to run the football. You know, Adrian Peterson said, you know, put all kind of numbers up there repeatedly. And, you know, even when the team's not the greatest, they still have a good running game. And I think that's what keeps, you know, Minnesota, you know, active deep into the season for, you know, potentially making the playoffs, you know, is their consistent, you know, run game. So, you know, Bridgewater's not making mistakes. He looks like a smart quarterback. You know, it's good for them. I think that the team's making strides. They have a new head coach, new quarterback. You know, they're grooming a new running back. You know, it's a good time for everybody, you know, all at once to, you know, start over. I mean, Cordell Patterson, their best receiver, he's only a year ahead of the other two. So, you know, they got a good nucleus if it all, you know, for them to grow together. And, you know, they could be a force in next year
Minnesota
or two.
Might be a team that's up and coming. There's no doubt about that. And when you take a look at the defensive side of the ball, just this past week, and mind you, again, we are talking about the fact they were playing against Tampa Bay, but it was a game in Tampa. They knocked that quarterback around, Mike Glennon, hit him up six times, intercepted him, and scored a touchdown against him, a pick six, and sacked him five times. So that defense looked pretty darn impressive against this Tampa Bay team, a Tampa Bay team that I would suspect is absolutely positively going to be one of the top teams in the market come draft time for a quarterback.
Yeah, I would agree. I think they signed McCown as a stopgap. I don't think Lovie Smith totally said, you know, I'm not going to look at Glennon, but Glennon's been playing, you know, ever since McCown got hurt. So, and he's not been impressive. You know, he's not horrible, but not, you know, I think he's had his opportunities, I guess is the way you could put it. So yeah, I agree with you. I think they may be looking for that quote unquote next franchise quarterback. You know, they could be, you know, they may take a flyer on somebody like, you know, Brian Hoyer, we talked about earlier, you know, in other shows rather that, you know, he could be a free agent. But, you know, I think I get the impression at least Tampa Bay, especially with their moves today, they're looking down the road. You know, they're acquiring draft picks. They're, you know, looking at building a team. And I think they're going to give Lovie Smith, you know, the time it takes to do it. So, you know, maybe drafting a young quarterback is the way to go.
Yep. Absolutely. Let's go over to a team that doesn't have exactly the youngest quarterback in the world. And that's your New England Patriots. what they did to Chicago actually was almost darn right embarrassing. 51-23 made Jay Kettler look absolutely horrible. And obviously a lot of people, we talked about this so many times before, a lot of people right now out in Chicago not giving him real high marks. But look at these numbers that Tom Brady put up. 30-35, 354 yards in the air, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions, a 148.4 QB rating. I put up the article today, Brendan. I don't know whether you've had a chance to see it yet or not. It's over on our Frat House Sports Facebook page, which broke down the numbers. Tom Brady ended up having the fourth highest October QB rating of all time. And this was a guy that just a couple of weeks ago, we were kind of mocking when he made the comment. I guess it was in the early part of the season, or it might have been right before the season began, that when I suck, I'll retire, he said. No need to at this point, not with these kinds of numbers. Second week in a row, this guy is putting up some monster numbers.
Well, if you look at the last few weeks, what have you seen happen that you haven't seen from the Patriots offense before? They actually got more than one weapon. Well, not only that, they got Gronkowski back, who looks healthy. Brandon LaFell is all of a sudden emerging as one of his go-to guys. I mean, Edelman actually hasn't even had the greatest last couple of weeks. And, you know, the team, it's getting back to that feel of, okay, well, which guy do I got to cover? It's not just one. It's a couple. And, you know, Shane Vereen had that, you know, explosive game a couple weeks ago. You know, this week, you know, Gronkowski goes off for 3 touchdowns. You know, LaFell is like the go-to guy on first down, it seems. He had 11 catches, 124 yards and a touchdown. You know, even Tim Wright, the other tight end they got in the trade for Mankins at the beginning of the year, he got another touchdown. They're getting back to what the way they used to be, where, you know, it's like, well, I'm not sure who the flavor of the week's going to be. You know, he's got all these options again. And, Stephen Ridley being hurt the running game a little bit, but we're seeing this gray guy, this new guy out of the blue.
Yeah.
You know, he's getting carries. He looked okay. I would like to see them go to Shane Vereen a little more, because I think he's got the burst and he's more explosive. He can rip off 10 yards before you know it. And I think they were, and that's the way it looked last week. Apparently, Friday last week, he came down with like a flu-like cold, and that limited him a little bit, and that's probably why you saw a little reduced role.
Why Gray was in was as big a role as he did?
I think that's why you saw less of Shane Vereen. I think you know Shane Vereen was limited, and you know, depending on you know how he may not have even been fully recovered at that point. It may have been hard to breathe. Yeah, you don't know what kind of cold it was, but apparently he was pretty sick. Totally missed all of Friday's practice, so. You know, apparently that's why you saw more of Gray. We actually saw James White a little bit, too, the rookie, finally. I thought for sure we'd see more of him before, you know, when Vereen went down. And he got a few handoffs. So, you know, they're looking at their options. There was actually rumors today they were in the market for a running back. But I guess they didn't see a deal they liked. At one point I heard Doug Martin from the Buccaneers, who they did a deal with. But that didn't happen. So I don't know. Yeah, I guess they're happy with what they got.
Mm-hmm. Well, and wrap it into those 51 points. Your defense had a defensive touchdown. Rob Ninkovich picked up a fumble and ran one in. I believe that might have been the first. In fact, it was. That was the first touchdown of this particular game. So the defense came to play as well, and they were knocking. Jay Cutler around quite a bit themselves. So they put 3 sacks on Jay Cutler. I just don't know what to make of this Chicago team. We've talked about it. I don't want to go through it all over again tonight, but you just, from one week to the next week, just don't know what team is showing up. And I kind of feel bad because, you know, as we pointed out last week, there are some very, very, very talented players over on this team. Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel like some of those guys, you know, the Fortes, the Bennett's, the Alshon Jeffries, Marshall, might just go down with this ship, and it may not necessarily be anything they could or could not have done. You know, it seems like they're doing everything they could do.
Well, I like what you just said there. They do have a ton of weapons, and the Patriots' defense, which, you know, I was questioning earlier in the season, you know, they shut them down for the most part. Yeah, Forte had a touchdown, Jeffrey and Bennett had touchdowns, but if you look at the line and stuff, a lot of that was garbage time. And they may not have even been playing all the full-time, you know, the starters at that point. I mean, Garoppolo was in for Brady for, I think, almost the whole fourth quarter. So, you know, the secondary's really starting to come together. You know, you got Revis on one side and Brandon Browner on the other side. They look better. This coming week's going to be a good test because they're going to face the team with the most weapons. So it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be a fun game this coming Sunday. I really do. No, I think it's going to be a good game. It's going to be a good test of the Patriots' defense if they can keep up with, you know, Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders and Welker, who you got to think is wanting to have a huge game. Wes Welker is going to have a chip on his shoulder like he's never seen before. You know, and you've got Julian Thomas, all of them. You know, they got Peyton Manning has plenty of weapons at his disposal. So it's going to be a good game. And I'm more interested to see how the Patriots' defense matches up with, you know, a team like that, because this is more or less a playoff preview right here.
Yep, absolutely it is. I'm looking forward to it. I know that one.
Oh, yeah.
Fun times here at the frat house for sure.
Brady's been putting up, you know, 50 points for how many games in a row now, and, you know, Peyton can do the same thing. He can be. He hasn't been quite so much late recently. They've been putting up, you know, 30s, but they haven't looked as, what's the word, fluid, I guess. And I think what looks different with the Broncos versus last year is Emmanuel Sanders has kind of taken over the go-to receiver role that Welker had. And Welker's kind of fallen into the Decker role where he only gets a couple passes, you know, throughout the game. And, you know, it's just a little bit different look than what they had before. And I think Decker was a little bit better threat than Welker is in as a big play guy.
I agree. I really Sanders, believe that the difference is Decker.
Yeah, Sanders and Welker are too much alike, and they kind of play the same role, you know. The two Thomases obviously make up a lot of, you know, for that. So, you know, I'm not counting them out by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm really looking forward to this game this Sunday. It's going to be a good one.
I think the other thing, though, that looks different, and not that we wanted to get off on the Denver Broncos because they weren't even on our list, but I think the other thing that looks different about the Denver Broncos this year is the fact that they're a little bit slower team. Now, when I say slower, I don't mean older. I mean they're running the ball more. There's a lot more confidence being put into Hillman, and Hillman's not bad. He's not doing a bad job at all. What the difference is you're not having the Broncos be that one-dimensional passing team where that's all they did. They just pass. That made them a faster team. They were constantly moving the ball. And, of course, then it gave the options open there for a lot more receiving yards and receivers getting touchdowns. It's taking a little bit longer for the Broncos to move the ball because they're doing the right thing. They're mixing in a ground game with Hillman.
Well, I think the best thing that happened to them this year was Monte Ball hurting his groin. I mean, Monte Ball was not doing what Hillman's doing in the backfield. Hillman's clearly running the ball much better. He looks faster. He's quicker. He's hitting the holes better. The other thing that's different from last year is Knowshon Moreno's not there. And Knowshon Moreno caught a lot of passes out of the backfield as well. And they did run the ball with him. He did run. And they did, you know, I remember he had quite a few hundred-yard rushing games, but I think they mixed it in differently, and he got more all-purpose yards because he was catching the ball as well. And I don't think either Hillman or Monte Ball is quite the catcher out of the backfield that Moreno was. And Moreno, I mean, clearly he's not – I think he played all of a half for Miami. He didn't look good there at all, and, you know, he got hurt, and now he's done for the season on injured reserve. You know, it just may be a deal where, you know, he really fit that Broncos offense well, you know, when they brought Peyton in and they switched everything up. And, you know, him going anywhere else, you know, it's just not going to be good for him. He's not going to be the same player playing for other teams. So,
well, believe it or not, we are already at the halfway mark of tonight's show. So let me just take a 1 minute break here, Brandon. That'll give my voice 1 minute to take a minute off. And we're going to recognize a few of our friends and a couple of our sponsors here.
Away from your computer? That's no problem. Take CLW83 Podcast with you wherever you go with the TuneIn Radio app. Download the free TuneIn app from the App Store or Google Play. Then search for CLW83 to connect to the latest editions of the NAWC, Touch 'Em All, The BS Big Show, and all of your other favorite CLW83 programs. CLW83, online, on demand, and on the go with the TuneIn app for Apple and Android devices. Download it today.
Do you enjoy a completely different perspective from all other run-of-the-mill sports shows?
What in the wide, wide world of sports?
Then the Frat House Sports Show is the show for you. Join Frat House Mike and Sidekick every Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock Eastern for your weekly dose of the Frat House Sports Show. From NASCAR to hockey and everything in between, the Frat House Sports Show covers it all. Be sure to like their page on Facebook and check out their website, frathousesports.net, right here on herbfm.com.
All righty, Frat House Mike back here with you with the Red Zone Blitz for this week. And hearing that commercial there from CLW83, the voice of Jim Williams, that just reminded me that you tune in tomorrow night, 7 p.m., for our second edition of Inside the War Nest, a program exclusively for NFC East and particularly Eagles fans, Philadelphia Eagles fans. If you're an Eagles fan or you follow the Philadelphia Eagles or you're one of the NFC competitor fans, this is a show you want to be listening into for 1 hour, 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Jim Williams and myself inside the War Nest. Hey, that is a perfect segue to our next game. Brandon, let's get over and take a look at a game that really, boy, oh boy, when you look through the box score on this one, It is absolutely mind-numbing. There was 921 yards of offense between the Philadelphia Eagles and the Arizona Cardinals. 921 in a game that the Cardinals ultimately won in the end 24-20. Absolutely ridiculous looking numbers here. There's been a lot of talk from a lot of people, obviously, here in the Philadelphia region. And boy, I sat and I watched this game. It was kind of a bit of a heartbreaker because it appeared that the Eagles had this game in hand. They could have won this game. Going into the fourth quarter and late into the fourth quarter, they had a 3-point lead, 20-17, after picking themselves up a 20-yard field goal from Cody Parkey at the two-minute warning to make it 20-17, and then lost the game at 20-24 on a long 75-yard pass from Carson Palmer to John Brown late in the game, or just actually about 30 seconds after the field goal. And that was the deciding factor. Nick Foles put the ball in the air 62 times, while LeSean McCoy only picked himself up 83 yards on the ground rushing, 21 carries, 4-yard average. Brandon, tell me what your thinking is, but I got to tell you right now, I plan on going on Inside the War Nest tomorrow night and saying that is a loser game plan right there. You can't. I don't care who your quarterback is. 62 times? Seriously?
Yeah, there's no equity there as far as, you know, passing the running game. You got to realize, though, they were missing Darren Sproles, which is a part of their, you know, rushing attack. But I think the bigger point to look here out of this game is I think these Arizona Cardinals are for real. I mean, they got a two-game lead in what many consider to be the toughest division in football. And they just went and beat the Philadelphia Eagles, who were tied for the lead in the NFC East at the time, or at least in the, they maybe not have been exactly tied. I think there's a game difference between the Eagles and Cowboys, but they were, you know, right there. This team, this Arizona Cardinal team's looking good. I don't know if Chip Kelly meant to throw, you know, to have that big of an imbalance. Maybe it's kind of the way the flow of the game went. I don't know, but it wasn't like the Eagles were playing from a big deficit. They seemed at most points of the game to be in, you know, in control. I mean, they had a lead most of the game. So I don't know. I don't know why he was passing the ball so much. Maybe, you know, without Sproles there, they didn't want to overwork McCoy. I don't see why not. McCoy hasn't done much this year.
Yeah.
But
the coaching staff knew what we knew, and that was going into Arizona, you were going up against the number one rush defense in the entire league. They knew that.
Okay.
So I think nobody expected that the Eagles were going to, you know, let's put it this way. Nobody expected to see the performance from McCoy that we saw the week before, or 2 weeks before, actually, against the Giants. Nobody expected that. But when you've got Nick Foles putting the ball up 62 times, to me, that's a game plan that just spells disaster. Despite the fact Jeremy Maclin probably had a season day, 12 receptions, 187 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So
I agree. They need to have better balance. We talk about that a lot on, you know, the show about when we dissect games, and most times we're talking about teams that were playing from, you know, behind, and you know, you don't really understand. I guess you can kind of understand it more when a team's playing that way. In this particular case, you know, maybe it was just a fear of the opposing defense that they just decided they figured they were better off, you know, passing the ball than rushing it. So, you know, I guarantee you Chip Kelly will learn from it. I don't know, you know, if these teams meet again in the playoffs, I don't know what, you know, kind of outcome you can expect, but you can certainly expect it to be a good game.
Right.
I think Arizona's, you know, clearly, you know, seated themselves atop the NFC right now. I don't think anybody's, you know, shown to have a better team. And,
well,
you know, whether you like Carson Palmer or not, him coming back has certainly ignited their offense. They look a lot better. They look a lot more in control. You know, he hasn't been throwing his interceptions like he had been last year. Maybe it's just, you know, taking him a year to get comfortable with Bruce Arians' offense, but they certainly look to be, you know, unbeatable really right now. They got a great defense and Andre Ellington and, you know, John Brown, as you mentioned. They still got Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd. They got a lot of weapons, and, you know, Carson Palmer is certainly, you know, using them.
Well, and we're going to get into a little bit of that before we wrap the show up this evening when we go in and rank the top. We do our power rankings for the top NFC teams.
Well, I think
we'll
I might have gave one away there. But
Well, that's all right. That's all right. But we'll get into a little bit of that right before the show ends. For the folks that are out there listening, you may remember that we did that last week with the AFC. If there's anything we're bringing up here you want to jump in on, please, please give us a holler, 347-826-9964. You can give us a call. Or if you're on the computer and you're listening that way, there might be a little Skype button there. And if you're Skype capable, just hit that. It'll put it straight through. Or if you're in the chat room, you can leave us a message there, and I'll make sure it gets relayed onto the air. We were just talking about that magnificent performance. It really was a tremendous performance from Tom Brady in the Patriots win over the Chicago Bears. Meanwhile, over in Pittsburgh on Sunday, one Ben Roethlisberger was putting on a rather similar performance of his own, racking up 51 points for that team as well, as they took care of the Indianapolis Colts of all teams, 51-34. And as I just did with Tom Brady, get a load of these numbers for Big Ben. How about 40 of 49, 522 yards, 6 touchdowns, no interceptions, and a 150.6 QB rating. Holy smokes, where in the world did this come from? And listen, you know, this wasn't like they went into Jacksonville and did this against Jacksonville or Tampa Bay. This was the Indianapolis Colts, who were probably considered to be, what, one of the top two teams in the AFC right now. Absolutely incredible performance. I'm sure there are many right now out in Steeltown that are saying, don't you dare change those uniforms.
Yeah, the ugliest uniforms in football. Well, hey, you can't take away from Ben, but and Ben was within about 30, 33 yards of setting the all-time passing record in a game. I mean, he was that close to having the best passing performance yardage-wise in history. I mean, I do believe we've, you know, had 7 touchdowns by many quarterbacks, including mm-hmm. 2 last year. So, you know, he was one off of that. But he was almost setting the actual yardage mark in the NFL. So, you know, he was on his game for sure. I don't understand what happened to the Colts. I thought their defense was better than what we saw in that game. But, you know, I'm still not ready to write the Colts off, and I'm really still not ready to anoint Pittsburgh as anything special.
I agree.
You know, Pittsburgh's, you know, they're older. We've talked about this before. We think they're, you know, within a year of rebuilding. We're not sure what Roethlisberger's status is going to be next year with the team. Yeah, you got all kinds of issues out there. And, you know, yeah, they're 5-3. They're in good shape in the AFC North, but I still don't see them as a serious threat. I really don't. I don't know what I don't like about this team, but there's something. I just can't put my finger on it.
I don't know. Consistency, maybe? I'm not sure. Yeah. I mean, you can go out and you can put on a performance like this one. But then next week, you know, I don't know, they'll play somebody like a Jacksonville. I'm just saying. I don't have the schedule right up in front of me. I can look up to see who they will play. But my point is, they could go out and they could play a team like Jacksonville, and they could lose, you know, by 30 points. So, to me, it's, you know, looking for that word, what is it, you know, that you're trying to describe them. To me, it's just consistency. You don't know. Pittsburgh reminds me of they're kind of like the AFC version of the Chicago Bears. You don't know which team is going to show up.
Well, we're going to find out. They're playing the
Pittsburgh,
Baltimore Ravens.
Or Baltimore, rather, yeah.
In a division game on Sunday Night Football this week, so we're going to see which team shows up, you know, and how it plays. I mean, they got the Ravens at home, so it's a home game for them. They played Indy at home, so they have 2 in a row. They could really, you know, go a long way, I guess, to, you know, making a statement if they can, you know, similar kind of beatdown. I mean, clearly Roethlisberger's not going to put these numbers up every week, but if they, you know, if they look good and manage to beat the Ravens, who's been a team that's been pretty impressive, they might, you know, they might change my opinion, I guess, is a way of saying
that line, that line right now, by the way, it being a home game for Pittsburgh, the line for that right now is pick 'em. It's a pick 'em line, which is a Baltimore line right there.
Yeah.
That is, yep, that's a Baltimore line. So, interesting. I don't know. I still somehow I have to go back to my analogy. I kind of assimilate them to being the Bears of the AFC. Let me get over to the let me get over to this other game here. One that did have a big impact on the division standings, particularly in the NFC North. And then later, as well, with the NFC South. And that was the New Orleans Saints and the Green Bay Packers. Saints came out of that, and, boy, a bit of a shocker. Won that one 44-23 in a game I'm sure Aaron Rodgers would probably prefer to forget. 28-39 for Rodgers, 418 yards, which wasn't bad. One interception, or one TD and two interceptions, so two TDs. Or what hurt him, ended up with a 93.8 QB rating. Good game for New Orleans at a time when they really, really needed it. And it, amazingly enough, with a 3-4 record, they're tied for the lead with the Carolina Panthers in the NFC South. Who'd have thunk this? They're 3-4.
Well, the Carolina Panthers actually have a tie, too, so I'm not quite sure – you know, how that all equates. They're both 3-4, but the Panthers have a tie.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, that, but whatever. I mean, you're right. The Saints are back in that division, and the Packers are, you know, looking up at Detroit now. The Green Bay actually looked really good in this game up until about, I'll say, with a couple minutes to go in the third quarter. Aaron Rodgers was at the goal line ready to score, and he tweaked his hamstring. And from that point on, it was just like the wheels fell off. He threw the first interception while on that drive, you know, just short of going in for a touchdown. And really wasn't his fault. The ball was a little behind the receiver, but it deflected up off the receiver into the defender's hand. And the second interception, you know, was just a bad interception. And from there on, it was just, you know, the Saints just throttled it on, and that was the end of the game. Aaron Rodgers is saying that he's not going to miss any time, but he was clearly affected by you know, the hamstring tweak. He even did run in a touchdown, but he ran in a touchdown that didn't look like Aaron Rodgers running. He was a lot slower. He had an open field with no, he didn't have to dodge anybody. He just ran a straight line in. So I don't know. The Green Bay better hope it's not a bad injury, and, you know, he better shake it off and keep going, because somehow Detroit keeps winning. Even though they don't look like they're, you know, all together, they keep winning, and they're a game in front now. So
Green,
you know,
Bay's on the bye this week, so that'll help him out a little bit.
Yes, that's going to help Aaron Rodgers, and he'll, you know, hopefully get, you know, a little treatment on that hamstring, and he'll be, you know, good to go when he comes back off the bye. And the Saints get to play the Panthers this week on Thursday Night Football. So
right.
We'll see if they're back or not. That's essentially a game for first place. Whoever wins will be in first place, and, you know, hopefully at least have a .500 record. This is turn it into one of those divisions where you could see an 8-8 team win a division at the rate they're going.
And you want to hear a crazy thing about that? You want to hear a crazy thing about that Thursday night game? New Orleans right now is a 2.5-point favorite on the road.
Wow,
how about
that?
That's
a little shocking. That's a little shocking. I mean, Carolina has a good defense. They've played good defense all year. Cam Newton hasn't really cost them games. He's not been Cam of, you know, 2 years ago, but he's been, you know, serviceable. You know, I hate to say that about a quarterback, but, you know, he hasn't been horrible. And yet, you know, that's kind of surprising. I mean, the Saints have not been that dominant of a team. They've been struggling for offense.
Mm-hmm.
And to be a road favorite, you know, when they have the, you know, pretty much identical records. I don't know if some of these lines this week got me a little perplexed. I mean, that Baltimore line's a little, you know, confusing. You know, being the Pittsburgh, being at home, being a pick 'em. I think Pittsburgh, you know, should probably at least have a point. You know, I think you and I had discussed that Patriots-Broncos game. That line opened at 3.5.
Denver.
favored for Denver. And to me, you know, that just seems a little out of whack. I don't quite understand that.
Denver is still a three-point favorite. Philadelphia is a two-point favorite on the road at Houston.
Well, that I understand. Philadelphia's been a good team, and Houston's kind of been suspect. But, yeah, maybe they're not getting enough respect being a home team. I don't know. Maybe, you know, these lines a lot of times are fueled by money, by how much money goes on a certain team, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, they clearly have an idea of which way, you know, the bettors are thinking. That's why they set the lines where they do. And they're clearly trying to get money to flow to one side or the other. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know if it's a good indication of you know, the game itself. But, you know, some of these lines this week are really perplexing.
Yeah.
Just to me, anyway. It just don't seem right. But anyway.
Let's get into some of our honorable mentions, because I want to leave us a couple of minutes to just take a look at those NFC teams and do a quick power ranking on those. But some honorable mention games. Seattle, it appears, got themselves back on the winning track this week when they beat Carolina 13-9. This was a team Seattle had lost two games in a row, and there were a lot of folks. That were sounding the alarm. We here, right here, you and I have talked about, you know, hey, what in the world's going on with the NFC West? Everybody was expecting this division to be so dominant. Right now, you got Arizona sitting up there at the top, 6-1. San Fran and Seattle now tied for second at 4-3. Seattle at least turned the corner, it appears, on their two-game losing streak, beat the Panthers 13-9. Cincinnati Bengals beat the Baltimore Ravens last week by just 3 points, 27-24. You were talking before, Brandon, about that Baltimore team. Well, I'm going to tell you, I mean, here we go. I mean, you brought it up before with me. You're not going to hear a whole hell of a lot of love from me for Joe Flacco. This looked like the kind of thing with Baltimore, it's so difficult to tell which Joe Flacco is going to show up. He went 17-34, 195, no touchdowns, two interceptions, and a 43.1 QB rating. I mean, you know, obviously you're going to lose. You're going to lose to any team when you got that kind of a performance. This guy can go out and he can have a really, really great two games in a row and all of a sudden come out and stink the house up.
Well, this is a battle of your two favorite quarterbacks because Dalton on the other side isn't one of your favorites. And they've been struggling, so they needed this win. You know, to help kind of right the ship. I don't know. I don't know that either one of these teams is where they're going to be at the end of the year. Flacco has looked better most of the season. He just clearly had an off game. So we'll see. I mean, he's a big game this week against Pittsburgh. We'll see how that works out. That could end up being for the NFC North lead, more or less, depending how it all shakes out. I mean, the Bengals have that stupid tie. So they're technically, I guess, in first place because of the tie, but right. You know, Baltimore and Pittsburgh, you know, one of them's going to, you know, be in clear control, you know, with the most wins anyway, because not likely to be another tie. So one of them will end up being 6-3. And, you know, we'll see what Cincinnati does going forward, too.
Yep. And the last honorable mention we've got to bring up just real, real quickly, not get into a whole heck of a lot of detail about it, but last night's Monday night football game, which actually turned out to be quite good, Washington Redskins. Surprised the Dallas Cowboys, beating them by just 3 points, 20-17, in a game I don't think anybody had picked Washington with Colt McCoy starting. McCoy went 25-30, 299 yards, no touchdowns, had one interception, ended up with a 94.3 QB rating. Tony Romo, a little bit of a scary situation last night when he went down with a knee in the back in the exact area apparently where he had that off season surgery and ended up back in the locker room for a period of time. So nobody's quite sure, you know, there was a lot of conversation about should he have been brought back in, should he not have? But ultimately Romo did come back into the game. This was a back and forth game. Interesting one from the standpoint of the NFC East, from the standpoint that now you've got the Cowboys up there at 6-2. You got Philadelphia, who's got a game in hand at 5-2. the Giants 3-4, and Washington's now 3-5. So, good game right there.
Yeah, I think they should have left Romo out. I think Jerry Jones came down to the field to personally tell the coach that he was fine and able to come back in. He certainly didn't look fine. He didn't look like himself. And, you know, I think they just took an enormous risk. They did show on the sidelines Romo having an animated conversation with the team doctor. I don't think he should have been back in, and I think that actually ended up costing them the game. I don't think Whedon was looking that bad in a little bit of time he was in there. He let him do a touchdown.
Yep.
I think they probably would have had a better result if they just left Romo out and went with Whedon. But, you know, Jerry Jones gets his way. That's why he walks down to the field.
Yeah, there were a lot of people that were talking about that today as well, you know, whether that was really the most appropriate thing to do or not. USA Today actually using the phraseology that Jerry Jones, by doing that, actually neutered his own coach. I don't know. I didn't actually view it that way. I looked at it as, come on, the guy's general manager, and he had the insight on what was going on in the locker room, so he just communicated it to the coach. I didn't necessarily see anything all that irregular about it, to be honest with you.
Well, we often see owners come down to the field at the end of the game and watch the game, but very rarely do you ever see them speak to the head coach like that during the game. I think that's the part that looked a little weird. It was a little hinky. I mean, a lot of times you'll see a guy, you know, Arthur Blank does it all the time when the Falcons are winning, and he'll go watch the end of the game on the sidelines, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think you ever see a coach, an owner walk up to a coach. Granted, yes, Jerry's technically the general manager, but, you know, he's not a very good one. You know, and that was a poor decision putting Romo back in. I think that cost them the game. So the Eagles fans can be thankful they made such a great call by putting him back in.
Yeah, I would agree there. All right. Now, some people may take exception. Let's do this, Brandon, in about 3 minutes if we can.
Mm-hmm.
NFC top teams. I pulled out five of them. Some people may take exception to them. Some people might want to throw a couple other teams in there instead, maybe somebody like a Green Bay. But I looked at it from the standpoint of who's leading divisions and or who's at least close in numbers and what have you. Cardinals 6-1, Cowboys 6-2, the Detroit Lions 6-2, Eagles at 5-2, and the Panthers at 3-4-1, rank them 1-5. How would you have it going?
No, I wouldn't even rank those five, to be honest with you. I would not have Carolina or Detroit in there. I would take them out, and I would plug in the 49ers and Seahawks. I don't care if the Panthers are leading the South at 3-4-1, and Detroit's a fraud team. So, basically, you got the three top teams of the West and the top two of the East are my top five. And right now it's Cardinals. The Cowboys and Eagles, I was going to say Dallas, but that, you know, even with that poor decision of putting Romo in, I think you still got to give it to Dallas. You know, the Eagles probably fall in at three, and then you got to go 49ers, Seahawks. But the Seahawks are coming, and I think they're going to be a better team when it's all said and done. And I just don't think – nobody in the NFC South right now looks good. I think the Saints have the potential to be a top team if they can keep things going the right way. The Panthers, they were in a field goal fest last week with the Seahawks, and, you know, they couldn't even put a touchdown up. And like I said, I don't think Detroit's all that. And I think as long as, you know, there's no serious injury there to Rodgers, I think you're going to see him, you know, the Packers take that division.
Wow, that is amazing. Carolina, by the way, right now, net points minus 41. That's what they are. But if I ranked them, I would rank them Cardinals 1, Cowboys 2, Eagles 3, Lions 4. I'd have to go Green Bay Packers 5.
No.
I'm going to give a little bit more. I'm going to give a little bit more to the Detroit Lions than you are.
Yeah, well, that's okay. We'll see how they shake out. I don't think they've played anybody yet, to be honest. So we'll have to see how that goes out once they start playing some, you know, play the Packers and play some of your tougher games on your schedule.
All right. Remind everyone, please, be here with us tomorrow at 7 p.m. Jim Williams and myself for Inside the War Nest, a program, as I pointed out, exclusively for NFC East and Philadelphia Eagles fans. And then, of course, we'll be back here with you with the Frat House Sports Show, 7 p.m. on Thursday evening. Appreciate everybody joining in with us here this evening. Brandon, thank you again, as always.
Yep,
and we will catch you here tomorrow, well, all through the rest of the week. Just keep listening. Thanks very much, folks.